Good evening, my name is Teresa. I'm an alcoholic.
Hi, Teresa! We love you, Teresa! Lots and lots and lots!
Trying to like the light, not the blind me. I like to see some light. I don't know. You'll make me nervous. Me in the dark, boy. Okay. Goodness gracious, great balls of fire. I'm like an anxiety attack. I'm glad I peed real quick. Right now, heart's coming out my chest. Just so much love and enthusiasm, and everybody's all happy. Trying to get with it. Sorry. Thank God we're not crazy on the same day. You guys can have some happy for me right now. I want to start off by thanking the committee, Ben, Nick. Thank you guys so much for inviting me. I always say it's an honor and a privilege to be asked to speak in the rooms of Alcoholics Anonymous. So thank you. And the work that you do all year. So you always deserve another round of applause. Let's clap for them. A little bit, but they do the work. And I always say, you know, if you're not happy about how things went, if you think they could be better, or you didn't like something, then join the committee. Oh boy. My sobriety date is March 29, 1990. But for the grace of God, I've had the honor and the privilege to be with you for the last 24 years. This is my first time in the program. I'd like to share that there are some first-timers. And I'm. Woo! I have yet to take a pill, a drink, or a drug. And I don't say I have yet to find it necessary, because I've found reasons and necessity to take a drink. The miracle is that I have it, despite that, you know? So the first things first, I usually got to share some stuff that stands in the way of my usefulness to you, because if I don't do this, then the rest of my share just don't sound right. And that is that this continues to be awkward. It's uncomfortable. I don't like it. I know some people who love it, can't wait to get the mic and the podium. I'm not one of those people. There's something about a whole room staring at me that I'm just not with, man. I don't dig it. I'm not with it. I am a talker, though. I realized that writing with the guys. Normally with girls, I don't notice. But writing with Ben and Nick, I noticed that I talk a lot. And they were just like, yeah, uh-huh. And we were in traffic, so it was like 5 hours. They were like, oh, my God. They probably were like, that's why she's a speaker. But it is really uncomfortable, and I feel very vulnerable and exposed. And no matter what's going on in my life, I get to share that with 1,000 people. I don't like when you guys give the registration number. That doesn't help. And then when I see people that I've seen before, when they say, oh my God, I'm glad you're here, and I brought some people, I'm like, no pressure. Like, what if I'm not feeling it today? But anyway. But I do it because somebody did it for me. And somewhere, the wisdom of this higher power knows me better than I know myself. I really believe that God is like, if I don't put her in front of you, you will lose her. Because I can disappear, man. I could disappear. And so I'm in Front Street. I'm about saving my ass, not my face. I don't know about being a speaker. What I learned from somebody, a speaker is those big black square things. I'm a drunk. And I want to stay sober, and my life is on the line, and this is a life and death errand. And in order for me to stay sober, I got to give it away. I never knew that my experience can benefit others. Never. I don't remember back in the day I was making notes talking about, I got to remember this so I can share this with everybody. Don't remember that. But I remember that I had a day and someone shared from a podium. I remember I had 5 days at a women's conference, and there were women that got up here and they shared their experience, strength, and hope. And I don't know if they didn't want to. I don't know if their sponsor made them. I don't know if they had a bad day that day, or they weren't feeling good, or things were going on in their life. I just know that they showed up and they carried the message to me. And so here I am. And the reality is, you guys are doing a 12-step call on me. I don't know if you're going to stay sober today, but I will. You know, I was watching, that's a lot of time, 40-something years. I was 6 years old when she got sober.
Thanks a lot.
I was. And I had already, should have hit my bottom by six. I shared this story earlier with the speaker this afternoon, that I remember Clancy, most people know he's from Pacific Group, but Clancy was taking a cake for 48 years. And I was 40 years old. And afterwards I went to him and I said, I'm sure you hear this a lot, but you've been sober longer than I've been alive.
Oh, yeah.
Now, he could have told me anything else. What he said to me was this. He said that when he was 8 years sober, he had a lot going on in his life. And he was on his way to the liquor store because he was sure to drink. When he got to the liquor store, he went to open up the door and he heard a voice. And the voice said, no, Clancy, you can't take a drink. Because there's a girl being born right now, and she's going to need you 40 years from now. Huh. Gee. So I'm glad you stayed sober. Because I needed you when I got here. I want to welcome our new friends. Welcome home. We've been praying for you. I share this all the time, that there is a moment of silence and prayer, and it takes place at every meeting all over the world. And I've been to a lot of meetings. And that prayer is for you. But for the grace of God, you have been lifted up and brought into the rooms of Alcoholics Anonymous. That's not your idea, folks. You don't get credit for that one. You've been given a gift. And it's a gift unearned. I wish you the gift of desperation. I hope alcohol is through with you. We ask you to keep coming back and don't leave 5 minutes before the miracle happens. You don't know when that is, so you gotta keep coming back. Let us love you so you can learn to love yourself and hold on and strap on, because you're about to go for a ride. This is probably one of the hardest things I've ever had to do. And even though the new person is the most important person in the room, because really you are, I don't know where I would be if it wasn't for the old timers. So I always told the old timers, thank you so much for my life and my sobriety. I still want what you have, and I don't ever want to lose that. I watch you. As I saw you today, I saw beauty in her, and I said, mirror, mirror, I want to grow up to be like her, that it continues to be an attraction. I need the people who came before me, so I know how to live this thing called sobriety one day at a time. I watch people with time. They still sweep the floors, and they put up the chairs, and they show up week after week. And they demonstrate how to live life one day at a time without picking up a drink or a drug. And more importantly, without killing themselves or somebody else. I watch that. I also watch, at least in my home group, I don't know about here, but But I also watch that there's a lot of old-timers that have been hanging out with each other for like 30, 40 years, and most of them still don't like each other. I don't know, there's an attraction about that for me. I like that. I like that when so-and-so gets up to share, they still go, oh, here he goes again. They've been out of 30 years with that guy. It's a trip. Something about that I appreciate. If you knew we share in a general way what we used to be like, what happened and what we're like now, and there's a reason for that. In our literature, in the doctor's opinion, it talks about death and weight. It is the language of the heart. It is the music that I have found in these rooms that nobody could have ever captured my attention the way you've captured mine. I'm still tripping. And if you knew, I hope you hear the music. For you see, it goes past your disease that is centered in your thinking. It goes straight into your heart. And once the seed's been planted, you can't drink the same again. We've ruined your drinking forever. Here, but just in case, sometimes I do a disclaimer like rated R, adult content, nudity. And I share in a general way. So you can imagine the details, right? Sometimes I share and some people be like, oh my God. I'm like, am I in a meeting? Relax. I invite you to listen to the similarities and not the differences. It took a long time before I heard my story. And as you listen to the similarities, you get to ask yourself some questions like, that happened to me. I felt that way too. And more importantly, perhaps this program can work for me. And if I've been to places and if I've seen things beyond anything you've ever done, good for you. I've done it for you. You ain't gotta do it. I shared this earlier and I'll continue to share it because again, I heard it when I got here. You may not want what I have. You may not want what we have. Because I heard somebody share this with me. But in the quietness of your own space tonight, ask yourself, do you want what you have? See, that makes it different. I'm in a weird place in my life tonight, so let's see where we go with this. I got a lot going on, man. Life's in session. I've grown up in Alcoholics Anonymous. I came to you emotionally an infant. I also came to you at the age of 24, and I've been sober 24 years, so it's getting a little weird. Living two lifestyles in one lifetime, and my identity is just a little confused right now. It is. It's a little strange. It's getting a little weird, you guys, for me. I don't ever want to forget her, because if I do, I'll go back to her. I only got 24 hours. That's all I got. It don't matter what I did yesterday. It don't matter what I'm going to do tomorrow. It only matters what I do right now, this moment. And I've been throwing out. And I've been cleaning house, trusting God, and being of service. I am inundated with the program of Alcoholics Anonymous. It is a working part of my mind and my body. And sometimes that pisses me off. I mean, I want to go back to something else. And it's just not working no more. It's almost like they talk about we outgrow fear. It's like a shirt that don't fit, man. It's weird. Most people get thrown off because they hear, this is Teresa from California, and then I start talking and you get a little confused. Okay, I always say I'm from New York, but I live in California. I'm the Puerto Rican girl from New York City. I don't know if you got Puerto Ricans out here. There's always somebody who's going to tell me I sound like Rosie Perez. I'm being tired. say she is not the only Puerto Rican. I'm sorry. I talk with my hands. It's kind of cool. I know, you know, I like when you guys have an interpreter because I get to confuse the people, you know, the people. You know, that's people looking at them, looking at me, and they're like, what the hell is going on? Here the story goes. You have to time me. I don't have no clock or nothing. All right. As the story goes, jeez Louise. My mother is an alcoholic, and I don't say that because I want to call her that or diagnose her as that. My mother is an admitted alcoholic in Alcoholics Anonymous. She's got 4 years more than I do. I came to this program as a result of attraction rather than promotion. I was never told by her or my cousin that I needed to be here, and I'm grateful for that. But my mother was very happy with my brother. She wanted a boy. She didn't love my father, never did. She married him to spite an ex-boyfriend and my family. My father's African-American and my mother's Puerto Rican. And back then, the 60s, you don't do that. We from West Side Story, yo. You know what I'm saying? So to piss off my family, she married out of the race, and she didn't love him, but she had my brother. But my father wanted a girl, and he wanted another child. So according to my mother, I am a product of rape. And my father has an entirely different perspective on that situation, and I let them figure it out. But my mother drank, she used, she threw herself down the stairs, she tried to put hangers in her, she did everything possible to abort me. Needless to say, I'm here, right? So she wasn't successful. But she drank and she did a lot of drugs. So when I was born, I came into this world. First of all, I was getting loaded in her womb. And I was born loaded. I was born addicted. I was born a preemie, and I was born sick. And my mother left me in the hospital, and she told my father, you wanted it, you can keep it, and keep it away from me. So my grandmother and my father came to get me, and they brought me home, and my mother refused to touch me, look at me, she wanted nothing to do with me. But then they came up with an idea. Because they were trying to figure out there's some way she's going to have to touch me. So what they decided to do was they decided to leave me alone with my mother, and they took my brother and they left. My mother said I began to cry, and she put a pillow over her ears to muffle out the noise, and she couldn't. She went to the crib and she put the pillow on my face to shut me up. And then she remembered. If you give her alcohol, she'll shut up. So from that moment on, my mother made sure I had alcohol in my system 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. I didn't get no formula. I didn't get no juice. I didn't get no water. I didn't get no milk. I got alcohol. It was put in my bottle and on my gums. My father and my grandmother concur with the story that that was the only way to keep me quiet. For years, I used to parrot the things I heard in the rooms. I don't blame my alcoholism on my family. I don't say that today because I'm not sure. I had never made a conscious choice to drink. Alcohol was administered to me, and it was given to me. I never had a choice. I don't know about crossing some invisible line or appropriate or inappropriate. That's just the way it was. And that's just what you do. Now, I'm an alcoholic because I like the effect produced by alcohol. And I am restless, irritable, and discontent unless I find that ease and comfort that comes immediately with the first few drinks. Now, even though I admit that it's injurious, it don't matter. I'm not into to the consequences. That don't get my attention. We talk about incomprehensible demoralization. I tell people that was my life. I didn't do a New Year's resolution. I didn't say tomorrow I'm not gonna drink. Perhaps I'll switch from scotch to brandy. I didn't do none of that. I was drinking every day, all day. I drank in my house. I don't need no peer pressure. I didn't hang out at parties. My mother kept me supplied. Most everybody in my family are alcoholics and or addicts. Everybody. There's only 4 members of my family who are not, and that is my brother, my father, my grandmother, and my cousin Petra. Nobody wanted to be like them. Nobody liked when they came around, so they weren't anything about attraction for me. Everyone in my family has died as a result of this disease, whether it's kidney failure, cirrhosis of the liver, falling down, cracking your skull, getting shot, ODing. And when you die in my family, we put your drink and your drug of choice in the coffin with you, and we take pictures. And we celebrate. We cry when a baby is born. This is my life. I describe my relationship with alcohol like a love affair. At the same time, you gave me adjectives because I didn't have them before I got here. You gave me words like dysfunctional family. That was an interesting word. I hung out with cartel, Colombians, gangsters, pimps, hoes, dealers, not on the streets, in my house. And those were my uncles, my cousins, and my aunts. I have respect for them and I looked up to them. I didn't see nothing wrong with that. I wasn't ashamed, I wasn't embarrassed. This is what you do. The very character defects that you've asked me to remove around here, I was breeding on them. You can't survive the world I come from without them. Thank God for alcohol. You gave me other words like abuse. Physical abuse. I didn't know there was anything wrong with that. Everybody punched me, kicked me, spit on me, smacked me around. Physical abuse. Oh, okay. Oh, another one, verbal abuse. I heard things like, you're stupid, you're ugly, you disgust me, get away from me, you're nasty, wish you weren't born, why are you here, can't wait till you die, you'll always be an idiot, you're nothing, you're crap, you're disgusting. That was normal language. What's the other one you gave me? Sexual abuse. I lost my virginity at 5, so what? Men and women took turns with my body, so what? Who's next? I didn't cry, I wasn't shocked or appalled, I didn't want to run away, I said, who's next? I really did not think there was anything wrong with that lifestyle. You see, the good old days for me is I can get sodomized, gang raped, and pistol whipped. And I go to the bathroom and I fix my hair, I put on my makeup, I straighten out my clothes, and I take a drink and I go back out there and I do it all over again. Those are the good old days. I don't know when the invisible line changed, I don't know when it got progressive or it got worse. It was like that every day, all day. And at the same time, I went to Catholic school. I put a uniform on and a smile on my face and I said the Our Father and the Hail Mary. I did my confessions on Saturday, and I even sang in the choir on Sunday. What about it? I didn't have secrets. I told everybody. I remember recently I went to this thing, and this gentleman tried to kind of bait me. I don't know what he was doing, but I was telling him that this was my life. And he was like, did you tell anybody? I said, yeah, I told everybody. Didn't I tell you it wasn't a secret? What part of that don't you understand? I would go to school and say, yeah, my cousin just raped me. I've been bleeding for days. Can you take me to the hospital? I don't know what happened. It wasn't a secret. It was normal. Thank God for alcohol. Because you see, I don't know if alcohol talked to you, but it talked to me. And what it told me was, if nobody loves you, I love you. If nobody wants you, I do. I got you. You ain't gotta worry about none of this. You cool? You and me, against the world, we can do anything. Anything is possible. It gave me the capacity to be fearless. That I could be shut down and disconnected. I had no heartbeat. I didn't feel nothing. Burn bridges? What, you think we want to stay together for long term? Reckless disregard for other people? You don't have no regard for me. Alcohol would never leave me, it would never betray me, and it would never stop loving me. That's what I always believed. I was gonna die like everybody else in my family. And couldn't wait for that day to come. I wasn't planning on changing that lifestyle. I wasn't planning on doing anything different. I like living on the edge. I like taking risks. I got off on that. There's a high in that lifestyle. I was emancipated by a judge at the age of 14. I have not lived in my home since 14 years old. I never played with hopscotch, Barbie dolls, jump rope on the monkey bars. All my friends are 15, 20 years my senior. I can't talk to no little girl. What you want to talk about? We got nothing in common. I'm grown. I lost my childhood. I lost my innocence, and I will never get that back. Never. And when I was emancipated at 14, I had my own business. I was living with a man who was 26, 11 years my senior. He beat me on a daily basis, and you couldn't have told me that wasn't love. That's my man. And if you didn't like it, you need to mind your business. The only thing I asked him to do was not to hit me in the face. I learned to be very vain. I learned how to dress up my outsides. As long as my hair was done, my nails were done, I had money in my pocket, I had jewelry, and my clothes were sharp, that's all you needed to know. I had no idea that I was dying on the inside. I didn't know that I suffered from a spiritual malady. It's another language you gave me. Spiritual malady? What? What are you talking about? I wasn't planning on changing that life, I'm telling you. There's something about taking off with a stranger and not telling nobody. I did so many things that I could have lost my life, and we laughed about that stuff. I hung out with people. I'm the type of friend, you hang out with me and you OD, I'm putting you in the closet. I'm not going to no hospital. They ask too many questions. No, I'm not your friend unless you got something I need. And don't get that twisted. I was very clear about that. I'm not hanging out with you if you don't drink and if you don't get high. I'm not hanging. You want a bond? No, no. I'm sorry, no. No. No, 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 no. I don't share my booze with nobody. I'm not into buying rounds for people. You come to my house, you better bring your own. Because this is mine and I cannot run out. You see, I give an example. But then people always mess with me afterwards to see if I'm still there. I'm not doing that no more. This is an example of what it used to be like, okay? I give this example. Okay, I smoke cigarettes. I smoke a pack a day. There are 20 cigarettes in a pack. You ask me for one. If I give you one, that leaves me 19. That is a dilemma. You understand? I'm one short. So usually somebody later be like, can I get a cigarette? I'm like, I don't do that today. Just relax. Man, I did all kinds of things. Again, you know, I trip out. I had fun. You know, a lot of people look at my lifestyle, including my sponsors. When I did my fifth step, her mouth dropped. She was in shock. A lot of people look at my life and go, oh, how horrific. Oh, what a horrible way to live. Oh, I'm so sorry. That's terrible. And I go, no, you don't understand. I wasn't present for my experience. You see, alcohol allowed me to not be present for any of that. I didn't feel no punch, no bruise, no hit, no tear. I didn't feel none of that. What's up? So what happened to me? How did I end up here? I still feel like I've been abducted by aliens.
I have.
That's what it feels, I swear. Because, you know, I'm in my 20s. I like that. Being in the club. I love going out. Sometimes to this day, I always say I miss that. It's changed for a different nod that we have today, which is the nod of identification. But I do miss that nod of walking into a club, you know, a bar, and that nod that's like, yo, what's up? Something about that, man. You know what I mean? Like, hey. I don't know. I like that. I like living on the edge and being reckless. And the more that I was reckless and the more that I took chances and the more that I caused harm, that was a badge of honor. And it was about getting respect by you fearing me. There was something about that. I liked it. The more you feared me, the more you stayed away. And I've seen enough two-way mirrors and ink blots. They took me to family group, family therapy, fresh air fund, big sister program, youth programs. They used to take us to upstate New York, take the inner city kids up to New York and ride donkeys and make apple pies. I still don't know what that was all about. They used to show me ink blots. I still don't know what that's all about. I tell people they all look like butterflies. I don't understand the therapy behind that. And my biggest thing is you could take me to upstate. You could show me ink blots. You could show me two-way mirrors. It don't matter. You can't change my condition, but alcohol could. Until for whatever reason, alcohol betrayed me. And it turned its back on me. At the age of 24, alcohol betrayed me, turned its back on me, and left me emotionally retarded with no coping skills. In a world that was unfamiliar. I came out of my mother's womb not present. And now all of a sudden I became present for my experience. And I believe that that's different. You see, I don't mind sleeping with cousin Aunt when I don't notice. I don't mind walking up and down alleys at 3 or 4 o'clock in the morning when I dare you to come up on me. I don't mind not taking a bath for a while when I don't smell me. I don't mind being under the delusion that regardless how tore up you think I look, I still think I look good. I don't mind causing you harm when I could sleep like a baby. I can walk down the street with my cousin, it's happened, a couple of them, and he gets shot and I go, oh my God, look what happened, I can't hang out with him no more. And I keep walking. But now all of a sudden I became present for my experience. The best way I describe it is I was sitting in this bar. It's a neighborhood bar. I call it VIP. You can call it barfly all you want. I still call it VIP. It's different. It's my stool. You know what I mean? That's my. They know what I want when I walk in. I don't have to order nothing. And I just remember that day that I came in. I ordered a drink. I looked at you. And I always noticed you're ugly at first. But hold up. It don't matter. It'll change in a minute. And I turned around, I took a drink, I turned back around, and you were still ugly, and that freaked me out a little bit. And I went back, and I took a drink, and I turned around, and you were still ugly. Now I was tripping. And then what was even more scary was I took another drink, and not only were you still ugly, I still went home with you. That's the problem. That's the problem. Now all of a sudden I'm walking down alleys at 2 or 3 o'clock in the morning. I'm paranoid. I don't know how to do paranoid. I don't come from that, man. I always say I feel like I lost my hustle, boy. I'm trying to get my hustle back. And now I notice that I smell. And now I notice that I'm dirty. And I can't take a bath because the water hurts my skin. And I don't want to look at the mirror because I don't know who that is. I don't know who she is. I never seen her before. Who is that? And I remember that the sun came through the window and it was so bright and it burned my skin. And I tell somebody, turn that off. I don't know what that is, but turn it off. They said, that's the sun, yo. I never seen it, I swear. I began to notice how I was living. You see, there was a time that I wouldn't pay the light bills and they would turn the lights off and I'd be like, I don't need no lights, I got candles. And I wouldn't pay the rent. I dare you to throw me out. And when they're knocking on my door, I'm like, who's Marsha? I didn't invite no Marsha to my house. And it's the Marshalls. I remember my uncle coming to see me and I got no furniture. And he's like, what's up with your furniture? I'm like, this is my design. Okay? I want it like this. Mind your business. The insanity. But now I notice. And then I notice the look of disgust on my grandmother's face. And I can't shake it off. And then I notice that Daddy stopped talking to me. When did Daddy stop talking to me? When did Daddy stop talking to me? I can't tell you when Daddy stopped talking to me. You know, the scary thing was, why does it matter to me now? I never cared. Why do I care now? And I walked in a bar and I heard them say, look what the trash brought in. How long they been saying that? I can't tell you how long they've been saying it, but I remember when I heard it. And something happened inside my stomach. I couldn't shake it off. I was trying to shake that off, man, and laugh it off, but I couldn't. I don't ever want to go back to that again. There are times that I tell people, if I can go back and get loaded, as insane as this sounds, I'm an alcoholic. That I still hope that somehow, someday, I can drink like normal people. I'm still waiting for science to one day accomplish it. That's the only reason why I watch the news, I swear. I'm honest about that. I'm be lying. I'm like, oh, this is great. No, no, no. Shh. What did they say about a pill? Be quiet. Watch the news. Shut up. They say something about a pill. Everybody shut up. Let's listen to what they're talking about. If I can go back into a state of oblivion, I'd probably do it. But I think I've lost those privileges. And now I am present in this world that I cannot change. I can't do anything about. No human power can relieve me of my alcoholism. And I'm reaching outside myself and you can't fix me. And what I suffer from is deep, man. And I'm reaching outside myself and I'm coming up short and I'm coming up short and I'm going crazy because I don't understand. Because I want to check out of this camp and I can't. I got a contract out for my life at this point. I owe this Colombian, he knows me, he's like my uncle, I still know him. He knows me as a little girl, I owe him 2 kilos. I tell you, I lived a life like Scarface until he got stupid, didn't kill the people in the car. I'm sorry. He should have just blew them all up. Whatever. That's another story. And I knew for sure. You know, to me, it's a cold thing when you invite death into your life and death don't even take you out. Damn. I don't want to forget that state of desperation. Bewilderment, isolation. Ugh, that's nasty, man. I went to the club where he hangs out and I saw his homeboys and I said, yo, homeboy's looking for me. Tell him I'm here. And I don't ever want to forget that I waited for him for 2 hours. I sat in that bar, and I looked at that door, and I waited for that man to come in and blast me. Do you know that he never came? He never came. That was horrible. I'm pregnant on my 4th child. All my babies fall out on toilets and floors. All of them. I'm amazed of women who have children and their disease. My womb was always so polluted and so toxic, I can't keep a child. As a matter of fact, I never even noticed when I was pregnant until it fell on the floor. And I would go, oh my God, what do you know, I was pregnant. And I would clean it up and keep walking. But now this baby was doing weird things to my body. And it wouldn't fall out on the toilet and the floor like the other babies. And life was getting weird. And everybody was moving too fast. I need you all to slow down. I need you to stop for a minute. I couldn't get a grip, man. I didn't understand what was happening. And I'm still being punched, and I'm feeling every punch, and it was nasty. I had the worst 6 months of my life. And I wanted the good old days back. I wanted the days back where it just didn't matter. And the day came where I say I did the aimless walk. The truth of the matter is I walked in on my boyfriend sleeping with another guy. I always trip out that that's my bottom. Because I've been through a lot of things in my life, right? I've been through all kinds of stuff. You know what I mean? I'm telling you, this is in a general sense. You know what I mean? I'm only telling you a little bit. But it always fascinates me that my bottom was that I walked in on my boyfriend, actually he was the father of that child. I walked in on him sleeping with another guy. And he was on the bottom too, you know what I'm saying? He hates that story. I'll tell you the funny, he's not gay. He wasn't gay. It's not even about being gay. It's like he was doing what we gotta do to get what we gotta get, man. He probably been doing that. I didn't notice. But this day, I walked in on him sleeping with this guy, and I was like, I'm done. I was like, yo, you got a problem. Like, I need some help, man. I was like, I can't handle this. This is too much. I was like, pistol with me, but not that. You know what I'm saying? This is too much. That was my bottom. I would say his bottom was my bottom. The funny thing is like months later when I got sober, he came out to California to see if I was still pregnant. And by then I was with a woman. Anyway. And I remember I left him, and then it was cold. I was living in Queens at the time. The snow was up to my knees. I didn't have a coat. Man, it was freezing outside. It was around February, March or something. I don't remember. I know it was cold. And I did the aimless walk. The walk with no purpose, no agenda, no destination. It's just a walk, man. And I ended up in a church. I wasn't looking for that church. It's not a straight line from where I was to get to that church. When I go to New York, I still visit. And I trip out on that walk. How I ended up in that church? The door was red, made out of wood. You know what those nails, those metal nails on them? That square brown handle? Never forget that. And I opened up that door, and that door was heavy. And I stepped inside that church. I don't know if there was mass. I don't know if there were people there. I just know that I stepped inside that church, and all of a sudden I was engulfed. I felt like a presence all around me. You told me not to forget my last drunk, and I don't ever want to forget this, ever. That I hope that if you knew when you think about your last run, you get so sick to your stomach you want to throw up. And I stood in that church and I felt that presence, and I said a prayer. It's a prayer that's different than any other prayer. We talk about only an act of providence, but for the grace of God. Seconds and inches, man. It was in that moment. Could have missed it, boy. With the grace of God, the window opened up in that moment, and there I stood in that state of desperation. Was I completely done? I don't know. Was I really surrendered? I don't know. Can't tell. I don't know. I just know that in that moment, there I stood. And I said a prayer. I said, God, please allow me to feel the energy, the peace that I feel in this church inside of me. I had no idea anything was paying attention to that prayer. I wasn't asking for years, months, not even days. I just wanted a moment for my head to shut up. For my skin to stop crawling and for my insides to stop turning. Just for a minute, man. Just for a second, I get a grip. I had no idea that prayer was going to change my life. Still trips me out. Did it come from the depths of my soul? Perhaps. From there, I went to my father's house. And daddy opened up the door. And usually what daddy would do, he would open up the door and he would turn around. He would let me in the house, but he would turn around and he would go upstairs. And this time, daddy opened up the door and he just stared at me. And I looked at him and I said something that I had never said before in my life. Was God doing for me what I couldn't do for myself in that moment? But I looked at him and I said, Daddy, help me. You have no idea. I've never said it in my life. Help me. I don't come from that, man. I come from the world where you can ask me for help all day long and I'll help you. You know why? Because you'll owe me for the rest of your life. I'll never ask you for help. I ain't owing nobody. I don't trust nobody. I don't need nothing from nobody. I've been living like that for years. And I said, Daddy, help me? Where'd that come from? And my father looked at me and said, with all the love that a father can have for his daughter, he had to watch me kill myself. And there was absolutely nothing he could do about it. And he knew it. He said, I wish I could lock you up and put you in a closet, but I can't. He said, but I tell you what. You're standing in the middle of a crossroad. There's three directions you're headed. You're so close to them, you could taste them and you could smell them. And that's jails, mental institutions, and death. There's another road, this thing called recovery. It's dark and it's mysterious. He said, you don't know anything about it, and neither do I. He said, but if you give it a try, and if it doesn't work out, the other three will be waiting for you. I always say that that fact that my father shared with me then remains true to me to this day. Every day I stand in the middle of the crossroad. For you see, when I go back to my neighborhood or my family, there are people still standing in that same corner, man, that I left 24 years ago, if they ain't died already. And I asked Daddy to put me on a Greyhound bus to Southern California because we have a tradition around here. It's called attraction rather than promotion. As I told you, my mother is sober, and so is my cousin. And when I used to visit in California, I used to go with them to these meetings. And I used to drink before, during, and after. At no time did I think the seed was being planted. I didn't even think I was paying attention to you people. But when I was sick and tired of being sick and tired of being sick and tired, I remembered the faces of the people in the rooms of Alcoholics Anonymous. I had the experience that I believe that I identified with that Bill had when he opened up the door and saw Abby. It was what I saw in you that captured my attention. Not so much what you said. Just like when Abby started talking to Bill, it threw him off, boy. He was like, what? Religion? What you talking about? Got him all confused. I remember the warmth and the camaraderie that you have with one another. I still watch people today. I watch you before the meeting, during the meeting, and after the meeting. I still watch people just like I know you're watching me. I watch you to see when you don't know somebody's looking. I watch how you interact with each other. The bonds that you have. I eavesdrop on conversations. I tell you honestly, I want to hear what you're talking about. That's important to me. You talking about her and him and them. Okay, I'm not with that. No. I remember the belly laughter. Remember that laughter you guys been doing all weekend? I didn't know what that was. That gleam in your eye? What is that? More importantly, I remember that nobody ever shunned me. They didn't shake their head at me. They didn't suck their teeth at me. Or try to shove a pamphlet down my throat. And for that, I am truly grateful. Because had you had done that, I would have been willing to die out there before I proved you right. And I got on the Greyhound bus, and I detoxed on that bus. I threw up. I shook. I sweated. I hallucinated. I had DTs. I hadn't been without a drink in my body since fetus. I was sick. There was a man on that bus that saved my life. I like sharing it because I hope one day some man is going to say, that was me. That was me. Because I was really, really sick. And I could barely breathe. And he said, you have to come with me. We were in El Paso, Texas. And we stopped at the bus depot. And he said, you must come with me. And he carried me because I could barely walk. And we went around the corner from the bus depot and there was a bar. And he ordered a drink, I don't know what it was, and I was shaking so bad, he put it to my mouth. And I sipped it up like a dog that had been out of water. And I believe that that drink helped me come the rest of the way. I don't think I would have survived. More people die from alcohol detox than anything else. I arrived in downtown Los Angeles on March 25th, 1990, wearing a size 1 pair of pants with 2 pants underneath. Damn that girl. So lost. 4 months pregnant with a dead baby in my belly. Didn't have a heartbeat by the time I got there. Still thinking I look cute, even though I was tore up. My mother picked me up, and directly from Union Station, the bus depot, she dropped me off in the rooms of Alcoholics Anonymous because she told her to. And we came halfway into the room and she turned around to walk out and I said, where are you going? She says, as far as I can go with you. And she turned me over to the very people that saved her life. She can't help me. I will manipulate her, I'll lay some guilt on her and I'll wrap her around my finger, but I'll play her like I don't know what. You told her, leave me alone. I always say I feel like a baby in a baby basket left at the doorsteps of Alcoholics Anonymous. It was the old timers that picked up that basket. I got sober in South Central Los Angeles. God knew where to put me. He put me with the hustlers of the hustlers, the liars of the liars, and the cheaters of the cheaters. Boy, them people scared me in South Central. Yeah. I've seen a lot of things, but they were scary. They do weird stuff like randomly shoot people. That's like weird. We shoot people, you know, your bullet got your name on it. You know, this is a purpose. But not just going to the store to get milk. That doesn't make no sense. But anyway, so that scared me a little bit. Just random shootings. I still trip out a girl who, what do you call, issues with authority figures. This is language you guys talk about here. It's funny. You got issues with authority figures? Trust issues. Self-esteem. Self-esteem. insecurities. Oh, well, this is hysterical. But I trip out that I've never listened to anybody. That's what I say, nobody's ever captured my attention the way you've captured mine. No teacher, no lover, no program, no family member could have ever captured my attention. I came into the rooms and the old timers told me to sit down in the front. They took me from the back of the room and they sat me in the front. They told me the back of the room was death row. That's where people chit-chat and take other people's inventory. And they can. Just sit back there and do you, man. Do you. Not about changing anybody. Do you. They sat me in the front and they told me to take the cotton out of my ears, put it in my mouth, and my best thinking got me here. And they actually said, sit down, shut the F up, and listen. And they told me to begin to listen like the dying only could. But you see, when I came to you, this was the last house on the block. And if you couldn't help me, somebody need to blow my brains out. I can't do another 24 like this. And I came to you like I had 20 bullet holes in me. I'm bleeding all over the place. I'm not interested in your credentials. I just need to know if you got a needle and a thread. That's how I came here. And I sat in the front and I began to listen like the dying only could. And I listened to the similarities. And what didn't apply, I put on the shelf. They told me to save it for later. And I heard words like, you're as sick as your secrets. It's an inside job. The program works if you work it. The program is outlined in the Big Book of Alcoholics Anonymous. You too can recover one day at a time if you want to and even if you don't want to. I heard the same message over. The redundancy was amazing. And necessary. You know what I'm saying? I'm hard-headed. There's something about hearing the same thing over and over and over again. And I remember saying, you guys are trying to brainwash me. They were like, your brain needs washing. And I tried to be sassy and cute. They gave me a sponsor. I didn't pick one, fire them, interview them, change them. I find it's fascinating, little thing we're doing today. I don't have the capacity to pick anybody. My perception is distorted. I cannot differentiate the true from the false. My glasses are clouded. They are flooded with resentment, self-pity, depression, delusion, insanity. How do I pick somebody? Based on what? They told me this woman is your sponsor. And I remember getting a little sassy going, I thought you're supposed to find somebody you identify with. They were like, you now identify with her. Some people call it Nazi AA. I don't care what you call it. This is what they did to me and this is my experience. What I've learned through the years is I've worked with others, I talk to them all differently. That is not a cookie cutter. They knew how to talk to me. Because I don't talk like that to everybody. But they knew how to talk to me. And they talked with me and they didn't talk down to me or at me. It was trippy. There was something about them seeing their mirror and their reflection and they knew me. That was weird. And I never listened to nobody, but I listened to these people. Nobody ever asked me what I wanted in Alcoholics Anonymous. I went to Al-Anon for that. The reason why they didn't ask me what I wanted when I got here is because all I wanted to do was get loaded. So they told me, get in the coffee shop. They didn't say, would you like to go have coffee? They said, get in the coffee shop. They didn't say, would you like to volunteer and put up chairs? They didn't talk to me like that. They said, put up the chairs. Get in there and clean the coffee cups. You making coffee, stand at the door, greet the people. Sweep the floor, do this, and I just did it. Recently, and not too long ago, a sponsee of mine had another sponsee of hers. She had a few things. And we're going to the meeting after the meeting. I love the meeting after the meeting. And she says, I asked my sponsee, she don't want to go. So what you asking her for? She got 10 days. You get in the coffee shop. But would you like to go? Of course she said no. I don't want to go with you people either. I learned the traditions long before I learned the steps. Thank God for the traditions. They help me to keep coming back. You see, there's something about nobody's in charge, that they're just faithful servants. Now, there's some people who really think they are in charge, and it's adorable. It's all good. They just gotta keep coming back. Just keep coming back. It's fine. I crack other people think they like the AA police. They crack me up. I'm like, what are you gonna report me? The central office? I'm like, wear an upside down triangle. You funny. I like that I'm a member because I say I am. I have a desire. I have an honest desire. How do I know this? That the very first step wasn't step one. That the very first step in recovery, they told me, was that I had to concede to my innermost self that I was truly alcoholic. Not to impress you, but in the quietness of my own space, I needed to get honest that the party was over. And now I have a desire, and I'm a member. And you can't kick me out. Oh my God, you should. I'm a very Latina. It's a mess. It's horrible. People who see me my first year, they're like, oh my God, she was crazy. I used to walk around going, I don't like you either, but you have to help me because I'm a member. I have a desire, and that's all you need to know. I don't like you either. What step are you on? And it helped me to kind of put away all my vanity and my superficial perception. Where the traditions help me to see you as just another drunk. That it doesn't matter if you're white, you're black, money, no money, short, tall, your political views. All I needed to know is that you're an alcoholic like me. It does help if you're Puerto Rican, I'm not going to lie. I'm not going to lie. There's something about that, I'm sorry. There's a preference. But it helped me, because if you didn't give me that, then I would tear you apart. They gave me a sponsor, and they gave me the big book of Alcoholics Anonymous. They told me it was a textbook, it was meant to be studied, it was not a novel. They told me to follow the black on the white. It ain't that deep. I used to hear, it's a simple program for complicated people. Keep it simple, stupid. That's how you can talk to me. I didn't have the luxury of getting into deep conversations with the old-timers on my sponsor about how I felt about the steps or that paragraph or how the neurons and the transons are affecting my stomach. I didn't get to talk like that. Follow the black on the white. I would call my sponsor. She said, did you write about it? No. She would hang up on me. I didn't get into long therapeutic conversations. It was very interesting. They told me that I must find a power greater than myself. Not maybe, not kind of, sort of, not you might want to consider it. You must. That this was a spiritual program of action and more action. That I had to get rid of one thing and it was everything. They opened up the big book and they showed me the first page and it was blank. I said, there's nothing there. They told me to read it. I said, there's nothing there. They said, exactly. You don't know nothing. You know nothing. And every time I go in the book, I look at the blank page. I've done a lot of big book workshops, and I always go into the book with a fresh book, without highlighters, underlined. I want to have a new experience. They told me this is how thousands of men and women have recovered from a seemingly hopeless state of mind and body. And if I too wanted to recover, why don't I do what they did? That this was their experience. And give it a try. If it doesn't work out, the other three were waiting for me. And I began to do the work. I tell people I've done the uncomfortable until it became comfortable. I've been on a ride for 24 years since I've been here, man. I'm so glad that nobody promised me no bed of roses and it's going to be all good. They told me this is the hardest thing you're ever going to have to go through. I watched the people and their desperation and the seriousness that they took their recovery. I had people sit across from me in couches and read the big book. They weren't there to get me sober. They were there so that they could stay sober. And I don't know about you, but there's something about that used to jack me up. I come from a place where people want something from me. You don't want nothing from me? I remember going to a meeting. I shared this in the workshop earlier. I went to the meeting and I told Miss Iona, she died with like 50-something years of sobriety. She was an old-timer, and I went to her and I said, excuse me, Miss Iona, I was new. I had like a week. I said, I really like it here and I want to stay, so I'm not quite sure how I'm supposed to sleep with everybody. You know, like, do I break everybody up in groups? Is there a number? Because wherever I am, I have to sleep with everybody in order to be there. And to me, she could have told me anything. And she said, now, baby. I like when the old times call me baby. She said, now, baby, I done slept with everybody in AA. You don't have to. And I took that serious, you know? I took her to heart when she said that. That was amazing to me. And so whenever anybody came to me and they looked like they were trying to, what you call 13 step or whatever, or trying to talk to me, I'd be like, you slept with Miss Iona. And she said, I don't have to sleep with you. They'd be like, what are you talking about? I was a mess. Anyway, I got some funny stories. My time's gonna run out soon. But I tell you, I went to a meeting early morning in LA, as a Unit A. I went to a meeting and I swore it was KKK. I swear, I thought they were KKK. They looked like it, everything. And I went in that meeting and I raised my hand. And I said, I don't care if you KKK. This is an AA meeting and you're gonna help the Negro today. I need to be in this meeting. And as long as there's no rope going around no tree, I'm not leaving. They were like, but this ain't KKK. I'm like, I'm just saying. You see, my insanity in some way helped me. The ego in the beginning served me in some way. I remember looking around the rooms at a lot of those old-timers and people. They seem, excuse me, I always say this because afterwards people get offended by the word. But I'm only using the word as an example. I can't describe it any other way of my ignorance, no? But in the meeting, I looked around and I swear I thought everybody was retarded, okay? Because everybody was redundant, they kept repeating the same thing, and there were some strange characters in South Central. Now, I could have taken that and said, I'm nothing like these people. Instead, I said, if that retarded man got 30 years, there's no way I'm not gonna stay sober. Look at him! Look at him! So the more that you were an asshole or you was like weird, I was like, oh, I got this. Look at him, he's stupid. I got this. I'm telling you, I've done a lot of work around here. I've had to unplug. I've done a lot of uncover, discover, and discard. All the things that I didn't feel before I got here, I had the privilege and the honor to feel them now. I've thawed out around here. I've had to learn in the beginning what wasn't normal. I used to come to meetings half naked because that's all I knew. And I would prance around getting coffee every few minutes, waving you. And I'm just grateful that I had some old timers pull me to a side and said, now, baby, what you looking for? And they said, you don't have to do that today, baby. I didn't know. I just didn't know. And they began to teach me to dress like a lady. And I began to do some inside work. I've been on a journey. I've been on a journey to block those things that are keeping me from the sunlight of the Spirit. I've had to learn the gift of forgiveness. You see, my amends list wasn't a lot of the harm that I caused others. My amends was the harm that people caused me. And this has become a life and death errand. then I'm willing to clean house and trust in God and be of service. Because I want to see the sunlight of the Spirit in my eyes like I saw it in you. I've had to learn what is it normal. I've had to look for a point of reference. I had to learn what does love look like. I've had to learn that this is my body and you don't get to touch it without my permission. I had to learn that beating wasn't okay and that my name is Teresa, not stupid. I didn't know that. I became a witness. I've watched this power do for me what I cannot do for myself. I've become the observer. I put one hand in God and one hand in Alcoholics Anonymous, and I live this thing called life on life's terms. And I've grown up along emotional lines. I've been in the fetal position around here, man. I've had a good time, and I've had good laughs, and I've had a lot of fun and camaraderie and friendships, and I've lost them too. I've had money and then no money. I've had cars and no cars. I've had a perception where I thought I understood everything and then I found out I know nothing. My relationship with God has changed throughout the years. That's why I like how they say a God of your own understanding, because I will never know who this higher power is. But at whatever level that I've cleaned house is how I understand him or her. I'm growing up. I'm about emotionally 24. I look for 24-year-olds just like I did growing up through the years of my sobriety to learn from children. You know, I got to watch them. I had an opportunity to go to Disneyland and play with dolls. I've had to do everything all over again here. And I just want to stay sober no matter what. I don't tell you that I don't have an option to drink or excuses. I have tons of them. The miracle is that despite every option and every excuse, I don't. I have tapped into a source of power. And this power always ceases to amaze me. It amazes me when I walk in a room. It amazes me when I look in the mirror. This power amazes me when I have a conversation with you. This power amazes me when I feel my heart filled with love. I remember I would never say those words, I love you, never. And don't you ever say them to me. And today I say it and I mean it. It's trippy. But let me tell you where I'm at today. I've learned to love so much. And I like it. I learned about joy, and it's so much fun. But I'm in a time in my life today where I'm learning about grief, and I'm learning about being heartbroken, and I'm learning about sadness. And if God isn't everything, God must be in this too. You can't fix me. I'm telling people there has to be nothing wrong with where I am today. Nothing wrong with me. I'm not flawed or defective. This is a natural human experience. My natural state of being is love and compassion and nurturing. And you taught me how to love. And so therefore I've loved. I got to build a relationship with my father and my brother, and I love them. And they love me. And friends. In the last couple of years, everybody has left. And I've experienced betrayal and jealousy and abandonment and abuse again. My brother asked me to be his advanced direct and to make decisions of his health care, and so did my uncle and my mother and my father. me, the baby. And my brother was a single dad with two boys. I got two nephews. They're 16 and 11, and they love their titi. And I love those boys so much. I didn't have children of my own. I can't now. And I didn't live vicariously to them. I enjoyed being an aunt. I like being an aunt. I like the opportunity to teach my nephews to live a different life than where my brother and I came from. It's nice watching that. And I've been sharing about this, and I'll keep sharing about it, so I don't need to share it no more. Most of you know, and some don't. But my brother got sick, and I had to put him on life support. It's my only brother. My older brother. We've been trudging for, I'm 49 now. We've been trudging all these years together, man. And when they told me I had to make a decision to not resuscitate and take him off that machine, I got on my knees. And I asked God to remove my selfishness, my self-seeking, my dishonesty, and my fear. What would you have me be? What would you have me do? I don't want to do this. I want my brother. It's not fair. This was good. It had a good relationship. I like him, and he likes me. But you gave me some tools. And my nephews are looking at me going, what are you going to do with daddy, Titi? I'm going to pray. Because if I do anything on self-will and I don't put God first, I'll be in collision with something or somebody and I'll cause harm. That's what you taught me. And I made a decision. And I watched my brother's heart stop. And I picked out coffins and flowers and his favorite color and his suit. And I said the serenity prayer over and over again. And I learned to be an example to my nephews that it's okay to cry, that it's okay to be sad, that this sucks. I remember on Christmas morning they came in looking at me and I was like, I know, I think it's only going to get worse. And then a few months later I turned around and I did it to my daddy. And I am daddy's little girl. And I put one hand in God and one hand in Alcoholics Anonymous and I clean the house. And my father looked at me in my eyes and took his last breath. So I'm learning about grief. It exists. I don't need to be fixed. I'm not broken. I need to cry. I need to be sad. I miss them. Just sometimes I go into the rooms and I hear, oh, this too shall pass. They're in a better place. Keep coming. Shut up! I know that it's true, but I'm hurting. It has to be okay. A lot of losses for me this year. So my identity is a little confused, and not only because of the years of my sobriety, I've been a caregiver for many years. I did the same thing with my uncle, and now my mother has Alzheimer's. That's a whole other story. We could be here, wow, man, boy, we do the dance, boy. Man, women, you are my shadow, you are my mirror. And I ask God what he'll have me do, what he'll have me be. I'm no longer the CEO of Teresa Incorporated. They say God doesn't give you more than you can handle, but sometimes I think he underestimates me. They say nothing happens in God's world by mistake, but I can get in the way. And for whatever reason, today in my life, I just feel like I'm rebelling a little bit. The loss of my dad and my brother has rocked my world, man. It has jacked me up. My sanity is off. My limbs are missing. My identity is confused. My security is mushy. But yet I gotta stay sober and be present from my experience. And so people go, what a blessing it is to be with your dad and your brother through that. I was present from my experience. That's all about perception. Check with me next year. I've been going through it. I don't gotta go on. Let me tell you, I don't know. God's been asking me a lot. For what? So that my experience can benefit others? I've always learned that everything that I go through ain't got nothing to do with me. Check that out. I got sponsees that stay sober just to see me get through the day. How about that? They pull up with an apple and a sandwich. They're like, let's check this out. Let's see how she does this one. I'm like, that's deep right there. Let me see her work that out. I throw myself harder into working with others. Financially, I'm lost. I'm lost. I don't know. I'm doing a dance with God. I don't know. I don't like that my bills don't get paid. I don't know when I leave here if I'm gonna have a roof over my head next month. I'm sure it'll happen. I just don't like it. I don't like that I'm not knowing if I'm gonna eat. Anyway, I'm going through it, boy. And I'm staying sober no matter what. It's tripping me out. It's tripping me out. It just doesn't feel fair. I also share this if you be new, because I don't ever want you to think, because I'm glad that I didn't get that impression when I got here, that it's all peaches and creams. Because then you might be sitting out there thinking, what's wrong with me? Because something happens when everybody's all happy and having a good time and I'm not feeling happy. I need to be able to say that out loud. I need to be able to say I'm not okay, but it's gonna be okay. I need to be able to walk in the rooms and tell you I'm not alright today, man. Yes, this too shall pass, but I'm glad that it's passed for you. Hold on to me until it passes for me. I'm glad we're not crazy on the same day, but take turns. I could be speaking all over the world, don't mean I need to sound brilliant and impress you. I'm a drunk! I work with a lot of people. I have a lot of service commitment. Why? Because you tell me if all else fails, you work with another alcoholic. If sex is troublesome, you work with another alcoholic. The only thing that ensures permanent sobriety is working with another alcoholic. And it's something about sitting there being present when I don't want to. Getting out of me when I don't know if I'm going to eat. But you got 2 days. And a lot of people see me being of service and they think I miss AA. I'm like, no, I'm sicker than most. So I chase down newcomers. Come here, sit down. We're gonna go through the book again. I got major financial issues. Sit down. I have newcomers that, like, I swear, Teresa, if you let me go home, I've been here for 4 days. I swear I won't drink. I swear. Anyway, I won't chase you newcomers. I swear, I'll try not to. I know my time is up. I appreciate your patience and allowing me to share and be here. It's a couple things I like to end with usually. Is that God is a show off. I have come to the conclusion so far that this higher power thing is a show off. And I'm going to tell you how and why. The grace of God. Recently, you know, I wanted to drink really, really bad. I shared about that earlier. And I prayed and I asked God to remove the obsession and I woke up sober. But that wasn't the secret. The secret was that when I woke up sober, I was angry. I was angry that I was spiritually fit. But this show off works like this. He's gonna take a girl like me, unwanted, unnecessary, unloved, insignificant, worthless. And he picks me up, dusts me off, builds me up, so you can see what he can do. Is that not a show? That's a freaking show off. It's a show off. a lady with dignity, integrity, and grace, and beauty, and freedom. So I say to you, if it can do that for a girl like me, you know, he tells me I'm one of his favorites. The only thing is that he tells you the same thing. But if he can do that for a girl like me, could you imagine what he can do for you? I had a hard life, man. I'm just a little tired. I am. I'm a little tired. I've been fighting for years. So if nobody told you they love you today, I do. I need you. And I'm going to share this because my friend brought it up and I shared it before. He's kind of where I'm at. The big book tells me to be careful not to pray for myself. And there's so much I wish I could pray for me that I want. I want so many things today. I've never wanted so much like I want now. So since I can't pray for myself, where I've been doing and wherever I've been going, is I've been asking you, let's make a deal. I'll pray for you. So if you come up to me after the meeting or you stand online to thank me, shake my hand, tell me what you would like me to pray for you for, and I'll pray for you. And then as I pray for you, if you could just pray for me. Yeah. Me, I'm gonna keep cleaning house, keep trusting God and being of service. Man, I'm on a ride right now, boy. So be gentle with me. I'm a little sensitive right now. So again, I want to thank you guys so much. I apologize if I captured you hostage here over time. But again, please tell me what you want me to pray for you, so that I can do that instead of obsessing over what I think is important for me, no? And then you pray for me. Thank you so much, you guys. So much.